Hey everyone, it's James here. Before we get started with this incredible episode of the Oasis podcast, I just wanted to remind you that in my day job, I'm an independent financial advisor. So if you're in the UK and are looking for help with investments, pensions, mortgages, insurance, wills, power of attorney, anything like that, feel free to get in touch via oasispod@gmail.com and I would be very happy to help you. Right, on with the show.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast. As you were.
Welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are okay. We've got a fantastic episode today. Really exciting, actually. Some of my musical heroes. We have half of Cooler Shaker, Alonza Bevan, who is the bass player and went on to play with Johnny Marr, and also Jay Darlington, aka Jesus Christ, aka The Shroud, aka Gandalf, who played keyboards with Oasis for 7 years. So really excited to finally track down Jay Darlington and talk to him, and also to Alonza as well. This, if you are not aware, I did it as a joint interview with our good friend James Hargreaves, the king of kind of Oasis and other band analysis on YouTube. The Cooler Shaker PR guy got in touch and was talking to me about doing an interview. And I said, well, look, if they want to get the name out there, actually, James does massive numbers over on YouTube. So we said, you know, we get on well. So I thought, well, let's do a joint one. And then he can put out his sort of 15, 20 minutes on his channel, and I'll put out the whole damn thing over here. So if you've been listening to James Hargreaves, welcome to the channel. I hope you enjoy this one. And there are plenty more Oasis podcasts to give a listen to. And thank you to James for bigging me up and mentioning the podcast at the end of his video. But before we get to the Cooler Shaker interview, the little clip there you heard was of the new Liam Gallagher, John Squire single called Mars to Liverpool. Let's talk about it a little bit more after we hear a little bit more.
Self-discovery has my sails in flames. Here comes that feeling. Here it comes again. I'm waiting for this storm to run out of rain.
So, I'm recording this on Thursday night. So Friday morning, we are apparently going to get quite a few announcements, we believe, which includes gigs, including a gig, we believe, at the Barrowlands and in Paris. These little leaks and rumours and sneaks have sort of started coming out today. And apparently the album is going to be March the 1st. So as I said, this is Thursday night as I'm recording. By the time you're hearing this, they may well already have had all these announcements, and I could be wrong. If we are, then we'll pick it up and cover it off, obviously, in the next episode. But it sounds like that is the plan. So I'm really excited about it. And let's just talk about this song for a bit. I think this is great. I think this is fantastic. It's just got a lovely poppy 60s sort of summery guitar work, and the melody's great. That's just a lovely big chorus. It could just be like a Beatles song or something like that. It's just got a real joyfulness about it. I like the little guitar, like playing around on D on the guitar, which is always fun when you hear people do that. And John Squire does it really well here. So yeah, I just think this is great. And like we talked about Just Another Rainbow, quite divisive. Some people thought it was brilliant. Some people thought it was rubbish. Some people thought it was sort of a bit of both, which is probably where I sit on it. This, to me, is just great. It's just a really, really great pop song. You know, probably the most similar thing I could think would be something like Now That I Found You. So yeah, so I don't really know what more to say about it. I suppose we'll think about it and get your thoughts on it in the next few days and maybe pick up a bit more next episode. But for now, I just think, why was this not the first one? Yeah, really, really great piece of work. So the only other point I was going to make, this caused quite a stir online this week, was that when the album artwork leaked, so... Obviously, the artwork for Just Another Rainbow, I'm looking at it right now because I actually bought it on vinyl, is sort of the spray can with designed by just, you know, with the words Just Another Rainbow on it. And the Liverpool, Mars to Liverpool is the same design, the two names, white background, and then the product in the foreground. And the Mars to Liverpool is like a chocolate bar or like an energy bar. And then each of the other... song titles have all got like a product relating to them. But then the way that the actual album, I mean, I'm only seeing it in thumbnail at the moment online, so it might look a lot better in reality. But right now it looks like a really bad Photoshop job that they've just put all of these like fake products on top of each other. And it just looks really weird. And I mean, I posted it. It sort of leaked and I posted it. And a load of people were just saying, nah, that's not it. That can't be it. That can't be it. That was just the general pervading view was just, really? That's it? And people were just denying it and saying, nah, 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 you got it wrong. And then obviously now it has been announced. That is it. So yeah, that is really bad. Like the individual, you know, the individual kind of products that they sort of created for it, I think are great, you know, like, but it's just the way that they're sort of collated in like a clearly... sort of weird, just photoshopped way, but just it doesn't look like they're together. It looks like they've literally copy paste, just looks bad. But anyway, not too bothered about the artwork. It's the music that matters. And yeah, if we were a little bit iffy, is this brilliant, is this rubbish about Just Another Rainbow, well, this one is absolutely a killer. This is great. So really, really great piece of work. Really pleased to have it. And by the time that we pick up the next episode, then we should have the information and we'll be reflecting on that a little bit more. All right, that is it for the news. I suppose the only other thing is there's Noel did a really good interview with Matt Morgan the other day, and he was in really good form and talking about basically his life now as a bachelor, because since he's got divorced, he's sort of moved back to London. He's talking about like just getting out and about and like, you know, the fact he's sort of given up the booze. But he was talking about all kinds of things, like going through a warehouse and getting rid of, you know, finding all random stuff from the 90s. And he talked quite a lot about the acoustic album that he's got coming out. And that sounds really interesting. He's definitely going to be playing in a little while. That'll be in there. And he mentioned like a very famous one that was on YouTube from back in the day, which is called Let It Come Down Over Me. So he's going to rework that one.
All the times I fell in love, and when my love was not enough, and for the future I don't see, just let it come down over me, just let it come down over me.
And he also says, oh, and there's another one that I demoed in Oasis, and I'm going to do that one as well. I'm thinking, oh, here we go, what is it? And he said, God Help Us All. And you go, no, but you released God Help Us All like last year or a couple of years ago. Like, what are you playing at? But yeah, I don't know. Maybe if he's going to do something else with it. But to me, God Help Us All was just like, that's what it should be. It's like a, you know, give me some truth or something. You just want to stick to the basics and just sort of get the message out. So I thought that was a strange one. You think, oh, come on, we know there's more out there than that. You don't need to do God Help Us All. But anyway, we shall see. The acoustic album does sound very exciting. He's booked a few gigs as well. He's playing, I think, Kendall Calling. I think there might be a couple of others. I can't remember now off the top of my head. But yeah, so it sounds like it's going to be a busy year. We've got Liam out in March with John Squire. Then he's got his Definitely Maybe stuff in June. Noel's out in the summer at festivals. All good, all good. It's a great time to be alive for an Oasis fan. And it's a great time to be alive for an Oasis podcast fan, because it's another one off the hit list. We got Jay Darlington. So excited. So let's crack on with it. Here I am with me and James Hargreaves and Alonza Bevan and Jay Darlington. And if you want to see me kind of smirking weirdly, looking like a square with these like very cool guys I'm talking to, then go and check out James Hargreaves' YouTube version, which I'll link below. But anyway, on with the show.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, today I'd like to welcome back to my channel for, I think, possibly the sixth time now, James C. from the Oasis podcast, who is co-hosting with me today. But even more than that, today I have the rare privilege of welcoming two of my genuine childhood musical heroes and two band members from one of my favourite albums of the 90s, Alonza and Jay from Cooler Shaker. Welcome.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
So me and James are going to kind of take it in turns interrogating you a little bit today. So I will I'll pass over to James, if that's all right.
Yes. Hello, guys. So this is going to be good fun, because obviously James is the king of Britpop type stuff on YouTube. And yeah, and the Oasis podcast does a little bit as well. So I thought, well, look, let's hit both sides of the equation. So it's all good. So I suppose the great thing, and the reason you're with us today, obviously, other than the pleasure of our company, is that the new album is coming out very shortly. I've had a listen. It's absolutely fantastic. Very exciting. So what's your thoughts? How are you feeling about it? Are you excited to get it out there?
Yeah, it seems like a while ago that we've done it now. I suppose last spring, I suppose. So yeah, a while. So, yeah, it's good to... I mean,
we started making it almost a year ago, isn't it? Songs.
Yeah, we've been playing some of those songs for a while, haven't we, now? So we almost know
them. Long enough for us to forget, yeah.
And on the... I think this album is obviously there's always been a political edge to the music. There's always been a lot of themes about whether it's, you know, globalism or these different political themes. This feels a bit more pointed now. We're getting a bit more. I mean, you've literally got a track called like F-bombs, and, you know, and there are some significant, you're talking about war and things like that. Was there a particular reason why this time it felt like you're going to go more down that route?
Well, the world is more... Just the world's more insane, isn't it? We're always really careful not to try and jump into any political hot pots or get partisan on shit. But we thought, we thought that's one you can stand on, that that we can die on that hill. War is bad, you know. So
we all know that.
Can you criticize someone for that? Oh no, war is. I mean, it is getting like that, where actually protesting against war becomes an act of hate in true Orwellian style. That's the sort of rhetoric we're dealing with these days. So we you know, we stay clear of the you know, any partisan political thing, and we're all about spiritual love. We just, you know, that's all it is. But when you see this crazy world that's just getting crazier, and the way that is projected in the media, like a little radio switching channels from one crisis to another, you have to say something. I mean, rock and roll is always about kicking back at the establishment, and the establishment are taking the piss at the moment. So we're just having some fun. We're not, you know, we're just taking the piss out of them back. You know, if they're going to take the piss out of us, we're going to take the piss out of you, you bastards. We know what you're up to.
And I like it, because there is a sort of the way that Crispin Cars has a spoken introduction, and it's sort of, you know, there's sort of a bit of revolution will not be televised, things like that. So it's like it's tongue in cheek, but your message is pretty clear and strong.
Yeah, we're dealing with censorship, like as we always have, you know, and it's been often the censorship by omission and that sort of censorship light, totalitarianism light, you know, it's always those themes, but it's got to a point now where you certain things just you can't have a public debate about certain things, and that's awful. If you can't discuss something, that's why you end up having bloody wars. It's just people that have, you know, you've gone through every other option and you end up fighting. And but if you're missing out that crucial option about just discussing different ideas, it's the, you know, the polarization of opinion. It's you people use that, you know, to their advantage, you know. Time tested technique.
I love that. I love the opening track. I love F-bombs as well. It's got this kind of crazy sort of preaching to a congregation, and he goes, "Brother Bevan," at one point. You know, I thought that was fantastic.
It's that spirit of, you know, like the MC5 and that yeah. You know, that spirit, that good spirit of the 60s. It was revolution, but it was also fun. It wasn't this. It wasn't a serious sort of Trotskyite, you know, meeting. It was a party, and also we wanted change as well. It was always in the spirit of fun, you know?
Right, so if each of you had to pick your favorite, what's your favorite track, each of you, on the new album?
I love F-bombs because it's silly. I love, you know, it's a nod to the Beastie Boys, and it's a good message. Fuck war, you know, and fuck those motherfuckers that promote it, you know? That's me. Sorry, Jay.
I like Happy Birthday. It's a cheery one.
I love that as well. Now, when you had it as Happy Birthday, because I don't know if you know the new Liam and John Squire song that's just come out, Just Another Rainbow. They've had quite a bit of grief for listing the songs of the rainbow. So I thought the words of the rainbow. And so when that came out, I thought, oh, have they just taken Happy Birthday and like done a version of it? But no,
it's wished it up really, a bit.
Really,
that's
cool
a great
song,
track, though, isn't it? Great psychedelic track.
Yeah, well, Happy Birthday or Just Another Rainbow or both?
No, Another Rainbow. Well, both, actually. But yeah,
both. Yeah, no, I've heard that track. I like that. Yeah.
Keep up the good work, fellas.
Yes.
It's a tune.
Waving the psychedelic flag. Yes.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah. It's really creative. So, lads, I'm going to ask a question now. It's a bit of a deep dive, this one. I don't know if you saw, I got to chat to Matt Priest from Dodgy on my channel. And he told me this story of the early days. I think this might be pre-J, I'm not sure. When your band was called Objects of Desire. And he said that Dodgy played alongside you guys. And at one point at a live gig, there was a geezer wearing jodhpurs and riding boots and holding up the sun and whipping it with a riding crop. I have got to ask, what's the story behind that?
The crazy heady days. We had a singer. We were in a band. Yes, it was called Objects of Desire. It was the late 80s. That's all I can say on that front.
See you.
Yeah, we had a crazy singer. He did actually go properly crazy in the end. But yeah, I think he did wear joppers. Not to be, yeah. Wait, he was just proper nutter. But we played with Dodgy, yeah, absolutely. They had a little club in Kingston, upon Thames, called the Dodgy Club,
Dodgy Club, yeah.
three piece. And we'd set up, I mean, Crispin set up a little club in Richmond Ice Rink, in the function room at the back of Richmond Ice Rink, called the Mantra Shack. We'd have different bands over, and it was a little club night. So what we did, there's not many places to play, as well as it's even, it was better than it is now, but we were just searching for good venues. So we would, yeah, we they came to play at our venue, we played at their venue.
Was there
They
any
were really good
competitive?
back then. Unlike us, they were actually really good. They were a three-piece band, and they had it all. Great songs, great harmony, great.
Was there any sense of competition between the two of you guys?
Not really. I mean, there was no. They were just much better than us. So there was no. There
So
was
no
at that
competition.
time, they. But absolutely, I think, you saw how, good they were at that time. It was certainly, you'd see something like that, and you realize you have to raise your game, and it was more of that than anything else. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in that sense, there was a competition. You wanted to be as good as them, just at that time.
Yeah, cool. I'll hand back to Jim.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, talking about that, you coming through from, when it turned into Cooler Shaker, obviously you came through and you were lumped in with all the Britpop bands, or what became known as the Britpop bands. But I always thought you guys, yes, you came through and you had the haircuts and you had the guitars and things, but it was very different. You had the Indian influence, you had the much more 60s influence, and I think that the big thing for me, though, especially talking to, two of the key instrumentation providers, was that so much in Britpop was just about the song, and it was a good, banging out chords, a good song with verse, chorus, solo, and you're done. Whereas you guys, you'd listen out and there would be keyboard breaks, there'd be these like more complex bass lines and things. And so, there was the extra level, obviously, that it was just a bit more complex playing than I think a lot of the other bands. I don't know if that was something you thought were you agreed with or not.
Yeah, possibly. It's probably just us wearing our record collections on our sleeves, really, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, we were certainly more into the 60s and the 70s stuff than I suspect a lot of the 90s bands were.
We would our record collection was just a few years later, maybe, than the,
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
the classic, the early Beatles, Kinks kind of thing that people were tapping into. I don't know. It was, yeah, absolutely the record collection. We're a bunch of noisy fuckers as well, so you have to
There
play
is
hard
that.
and just get above the next person to get over that. Crispin and Jay, I had to play up the neck just to get heard, on the bass. And we, yeah, it was more that getting heard. So yeah, you just trying to, we were
Yeah.
frantic and young as well. That's also a good reason to play lots of notes and have lots of little sections. I don't know. We just wanted, yeah, it was rock and
Just
roll's
heard.
exciting, isn't it? You want it to be exciting, and I think, you know. It's,
That is great. I'll just share a little thing from when I first heard the song "Hey Dude," right? So I knew Tap Bar and Grateful Dead, but when I first heard "Hey Dude," and then you go like, "Oh, that was a good chorus." And you go, wait, there's another chorus. Like this, it's just so many of your songs. Like there's like you think it's done. Okay, now it's going to go back to the verse. Whoa, it's gone off in this direction now. And then there's like, it's like you've got, I don't know. It's like there's sort of there's just extra
psychedelic
stuff.
Tourette's.
Yeah, well, you could say that, I suppose. But was it important to you, like when putting these things together, it'd be like, okay, we've got 3 minutes of a good song. No, let's go off and do something else here. Let's add a little bit more to this.
I think so. I mean,
Yeah.
certainly Crispy's got that real pop melodic sort of thing going on. He just can just pick out a great, instant melody out of just a, you know, simple chord, because he's always been really great at that. So that's a big part of it. I'm trying to think what
we like lots of hooks, so you have to make the song longer to get them all in.
It's like those early singles, you know, they were maybe 2.5-3 minutes long. And then we were talking about that on this more recent album, where you'd listen to, you know, a very short song, but it felt like you'd been through this whole journey of ups and downs, through little, you know, dark corners, up alleyways and back. And it's a, you know, that idea that those songs, they would cram in a lot of parts and a lot of ups and downs into a very short space. You know, it was just keep
around the welding 2 minutes.
That's it. Plus, no one's got, you know, it was like, you know, no one's got attention spans anymore. So it works for
I remember when that came out. I remember when Hey Dude came out. Do you remember Top of the Pops magazine, like way back in the day?
Yeah.
I must have been, 13 or something. And I'd heard Tatva on the radio. I was like, that is like the best thing I've ever heard. It's when the kicks in. I was mesmerized. I absolutely was. And I went out and bought it, and I bought the bastard wrong CD, because you had two CDs, and I got the one that didn't have the proper album version on. So I went out and got K, and amazing. And I remember seeing that that video for Hey Dude, where you guys are on the top, rooftop of the bus driving around London, and just thinking, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. What do you remember about like doing that, like going around London?
Oh, it was such a hoot doing that.
You must have been
crazy.
Did you have the music blasting, or were you just miming silently?
No, that was, man. It was a lovely day, wasn't it? It was shining. We had that French director, Stephen Sidney.
All right.
Yeah.
Classic. Real, great guy.
Quite hilarious. Going through rush hour London.
He was dating Kylie Minogue at the time. We were just starting to pick up, so we were in this whole other. It was another world for us, certainly for me.
Yeah, go on, Jay.
Crazy heady time.
I was going to say it was it was quite. I couldn't stop laughing actually, because it was just so ridiculous what we were doing next. We were just on this open top bus going over all the sights you'd expect in London. And people just going about their general day, sort of looking up, going, "What the hell is going on up there?" So yeah, it was quite fun turning the heads as we were going along. And there was a point where we did part of it. We're on top of a car, I seem to recall. So that was quite interesting. So pretending to be Superman strapped to the front of a car, going around London, like you do, you know.
Standard rock star behavior. Standard rock star behavior.
Yeah, it is. Tick. I've ticked the box.
I do remember being stuck out on a crane or something at some point.
That's it, on a crane on top of a roof.
Then he moves with the camera, and then,
So
there's one way to earn a living.
I still haven't quite mentally adjusted to the fact that I'm right now talking to the two guys who were in that video. Just absolutely
different wigs now.
Different
wigs. I was going to say on the obviously on the Oasis side. So do you know you guys supported Oasis at Nebworth, which must have been a hell of a gig. Can you talk about when you first encountered the Oasis guys and how that would have come about? Because also Noel was quoted as saying, "Cooler Shaker are the best band in Britain" as well. So that must have been quite a big deal at the time.
Yeah, we were lucky that they just liked what we were doing. And vice versa. And I guess we've got quite a few records in common in our collections. So, I see why they probably would like us. But, that was amazing getting that gig. I mean, it's just like a sea of people. It was insane. It was surreal, wasn't it, Alonzo, looking up with that amount of...
We hadn't really seen...
realizing how popular they were. It's just incredible.
Well, it was like those big 80s kind of massive festivals, but instead of some international, you know, mega band, it was, you know, a bunch of guys that you could kind of relate to. Like, it was a rock and roll band, you know, playing this, you know, pretty, you know, almost punk, you know, and they're up on that massive stage. It was, it was surreal. It was when you're looking at that many people, and even the audience, when it starts, it's already, you know, the size of the gap between us and the audience is already the size of the gigs we were playing, wasn't it? It was.
Yeah.
And what about the? I know that I've heard James Dean Bradfield say it was actually kind of, I think he didn't really enjoy the process because he just sort of, it sort of, you know, I don't know if it, I suppose it's the connection with the audience, but it also sort of made him feel like, okay, this is our sort of point in the, where we are in the you know, the echelons. I mean, how did you feel about it? Did you actually enjoy playing it, or was it a little bit too weird?
Yeah, and no, I loved it. Brilliant. It's just that whole thing of looking out, and like I say, it was, that just becomes a bit surreal. But if you just dig in and get on with it, look, eyes down for a full house, that's what I say.
Session playing Bennett and Someone Always Gets There First. And tonight, co-presenter, I thought I was going to be all on my Todd for the whole week, but Noel Gallagher from Oasis ably steps into the shoes of Steve Lamacq.
What is a Todd and why were you on it?
Because it was very comfortable and I was perched there very happily, thank you.
Like a parrot, no doubt.
Just like that. So I saw you at Chelmsford over the weekend.
Yeah, that's when you blagged me into doing this.
Yeah, yeah, you're very kind. Oh. Cost me in drink, though.
It did indeed. Yeah.
You got to see Cooler Shaker then?
I did.
What did you think?
I've seen him before. I've seen him supporting the presidency of the United States of America. And I've seen him at Nebworth. But it's the first time I've stood out front at a gig for about 3 years now. I like him, you know what I mean? And a lot of people, not our kid, hates him for a start. But I've got some stuff off the album at home, so I think it's really good. But, you know, I like him. I mean, people go on about him being retro and that, but I mean...
What does Liam like, actually? I can't imagine.
He likes the Beatles, and that's about the top and bottom of it, really.
Anything current, apart from yourselves?
No, not really, no. He likes Cast and that, you know, and... well, Cast, really.
Just, yeah. Okay, Cast and the Beatles.
And then moving on then, Jay, obviously you ended up being part of Oasis, or, you know, playing with them for a long, long time. So how did that... So did you become pals with them, and then how did that sort of transition through?
Well, that was mad. I kind of stopped music for a bit. I had families and all that stuff. And I had a normal job at the time. And I got back from work one day, and the missus at the time said, there's an answer phone message you might want to listen to. And I went, what do you mean? She went, it's Noel Gallagher. And I went, oh, fuck off. It's probably my brother taking the mickey or something. So anyway, I played the answer phone. It was definitely Noel. So I rung the number. And he's just like, all right. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Everyone hates us at the moment. Do you want to join the band? I was like, yes. And he was like, don't you want to think about it? And obviously he didn't realize I was working in a warehouse at the time. So So I just went up for rehearsal with them and it clicked. And then I did about 7 years with them, I think, till they split.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing experience. But, yeah, car crashes, all sorts, you name it. You go through the list, I can tick it off. Midget tossing backstage, the whole lot. We had it. Sorry to all the midgets out there.
Right. Well, we've seen that because that was on the Lord Don't Slow Me Down documentary. That show.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. That gives you a little eye of what sort of stuff went on backstage. Yeah. Obviously, I can't talk about some of it.
Can I ask a question on that? Follow-up question on that. So obviously, Jay, you were there for most of the stuff behind the scenes. Again, you don't have to say anything you'd rather not. And, you know, I just want to ask, though, were you there in 2009 backstage for the final bust up?
I was. And you can read all about it in my book, which is out next week for $2.99. No, I'm joking. Yes, I was. But I wasn't in the room. I just heard... crash bang wallop. I was eating my lunch at the time and I thought, that sounds bad. And I just thought there was something had fallen over or something. And then the tour manager came in and got me and said, leave your food, we're off. And I went, what do you mean? And obviously just got carted off and then got told in the car what had happened. So it was all very surreal that day. I wasn't really involved with the crash bang wallop side of it, but you know, it's brothers and all that, and it, I've got brothers.
Dare I ask, were you ever involved in any... you seem like a pretty chill guy. I don't know. Were you?
No, ever... I didn't get involved in any if I can help it. But, I mean...
No one would mess with Jay.
They get juju.
He does do his juju magic on them. Mind control.
That's it.
What was the process like? So it's obviously you've got these records, and then you've got to then try and recreate that on stage. So how did Noel sort of go about that? I know obviously Mikey Rowe had been such a big part of the band for the years before. Did you have sort of a meeting with Mike to sort of decide how to do that, or how did that work?
No, not at all. I mean, some of those records are so anthemic, you couldn't be playing jazz all over them. You know, people would notice if I started doing a jazz version of Don't Look Back in Anger. It starts like this and it goes like that, and don't deviate. There was room to fiddle about a bit, but those songs are so set. You couldn't have a 2-hour guitar solo in the middle or anything. And people really know. I remember having a discussion with Noel about it once. So, and we sort of came to the conclusion that I think when you go to a gig, people have the record playing in their head, you know, so it doesn't really sound like it does in the room. It's kind of, you've got some kind of psychic stuff going on, haven't you, when you go to a gig?
You've got volume on your side in a gig.
Got volume on your side, yeah.
You're just very, very loud, so that makes up for a lot in terms of excitement, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, they're all anthems, their tunes, so you couldn't be, you know, going curveball on it. They're not going to go reggae anytime soon, are they?
The only one, I suppose, that you do go a little bit off-piste is at the end of Cigarettes and Alcohol, that would then go off into like a 2-minute sort of a Whole Lot of Love kind of riff.
They like to have a little bit of a wig out now and then, yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of those tunes are all singles, so, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how Noel thinks about it. He might think, stuff everyone, I want to do this today. And he'd be well within his rights.
And in terms of recording as well, I believe you only play on one Oasis recorded song, which is on the Dig Out Your Soul album.
That's right. Yeah, I did a session at Abbey Road for them, which was quite surreal because the last time I was there was with Alonza and the guys back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
So in the same room as well. So it was quite strange doing that.
Yeah.
That was all fun, pretty straightforward. So I played on a couple of tunes. Falling Down was the one that got.
Yeah. That's the only one that's credited as far as I can see.
Yeah. I played on other couples, but they didn't get used. But yeah, because they were too good, you know, basically. I'm joking. Yeah. So it was really surreal. I had a terrible hangover that day as well. So I opened my eye. I mean, sort of Abbey Road through the headphones with Noel going, right, off you go then. I was like, oh, okay. But it's good. It was a good session, actually.
Are you then coming up with it yourself, or is Noel sort of got a humming you an idea, or how did that work?
No, he just said do what you do. I think he liked all those sounds that I used on things like Tapper and, you know, all those very psychedelic Beatles kind of mellotrons. And funny enough, Noel has one of the best keyboard collections I've ever seen, and he's a guitarist. But when I went into Abbey Road, the whole room was full. And you name it, it was on there. Two of each. So he's a bit of a collector. But he's got all the old vintage gear, you know.
Yeah, he's just selling stuff at the moment, actually. I don't know if you saw it popped up. Denmark Street vintage guitars popped up yesterday. They had an Oasis collection selling all kinds of stuff, but very pricey. Very pricey.
Well, it There's would a couple be, of keyboards wouldn't it? In there. It's all got history, isn't it?
Alonzo, I've got a question for you.
Okay, lovely.
You're not allowed to pick Nebworth. What was, so far, the high point for Cooler Shaker live? What was the best gig you guys ever did, in your opinion?
Goodness me.
No pressure.
Well, they've all been so amazing, haven't they, Alonzo?
They were all amazing. That's the problem. The one that's particularly amazing. I love playing the Fillmore Fillmore West in San Francisco, just because of it's that, you know, we did two nights there, was it, in 99, and we'd sold it out, so we got the poster when you sell out the Fillmore, they make up the classic pop art kind of poster. It's just such a classic venue to you know. I've been reading about the Merry Pranksters and all of that shit. So it was a teenager and stuff. So to end up in San Francisco playing at the Fillmore West was just a huge, you know.
Yeah, Cream and Zeppelin played there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it was.
That's insane! Wow, I did. You know what? I'm pretty good on my Britpop kind of history stuff. I didn't know you guys had played there. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is. It's always great to, there's, when we play San Francisco, even now, they really understand the music, you know, where it's coming from. So you get some real great, you get some old heads that come down, and even that new generation, it's a really, good music, really still a great music scene there.
And Alonzo, I have to ask.
It's crazy at the moment, San Francisco.
I have to ask, what's that cool little red keyboard in the background?
Oh, the harmonium, that's been on a few records. Yeah, does it work? Yeah, it does work, I think.
That is cool. That looks like something straight off Sergeant Pepper's.
that's been on a few. That's made it on a few, hasn't it, Jay?
Oh, it has indeed. Sir.
Even on K.
Is it?
We picked up in Ricky Ram in Delhi. And famous music shop where the Beatles went back on their visit to Rishikesh back then.
Yeah,
I still got the signed photo of the Beatles there in their shop, you know.
Yeah,
I love this kind of connection.
So yeah, we went in there and just bought up a load of stuff back in early 90s when we were out there.
Yeah, I love the way you guys kind of do seem to connect like almost seamlessly to the psychedelia scene. Like the fact that you've played San Francisco even, you know, reinforces that. I love how kind of you can almost listen to the Beatles in their psychedelic era seamlessly straight into Cooler Shaker. Was that kind of intentional?
Well, it's like I say, it's just just wearing your record, record collection on your sleeve.
There was, even in the
'80s, there was, if you weren't listening to the pop scene amongst the indie music, there was always that sort of '60s and slightly psychedelic influence. Certainly that became more apparent with the shoegaze thing, but there's always been that undercurrent, you know, certainly within, you know, the indie scene, whatever you want to call it, you know, that it was an indie scene back in the '80s. It was the alternative sort of scene. And there were lots of bands, referencing that sort of vibe, that '60s, certainly, melodically, and you know, certainly, psychedelic thing.
So my favorite Cooler Shaker track's a really obscure one, which is track 3 on K, the Temple of Everlasting Light.
Oh yeah,
I love that. I feel like that almost blends with a George Harrison thing, like the Inner Light or something like that. It seems to just blend perfectly to me.
Yeah, we love all that.
We love it, yeah.
Yeah.
We love the fairies, a bit of folky stuff and all of the, yeah. Also those sounds, you know, it's nice to mix that in with rock and roll. You know, I think Zeppelin certainly did it, didn't they? And Beatles. Just mixing non-rock and roll instruments in a rock and roll setting, it's always just adds colour. And
yeah, definitely.
Just going to say, Alonzo, obviously Jay went off and did his Oasis thing. You were off and played with Johnny Marr for a while. I was just going to ask what that was like and how that kind of compares to playing with Cooler Shaker.
Yeah, it's that world, that whole Manchester music scene that I entered into, much like Jay. It's it was a real privilege, actually. It was musically he's fantastic, really great musician and a proper music fan, you know, that just plays for the love of it. You know, I think Keith Richards is someone like that, just has to keep playing, one of those guys. He's, you know, born guitarist. So yeah, it was interesting, you know, just also becoming aware of that north-south thing that I wasn't particularly aware of, but you became aware of it in, you know, being up in Manchester particularly, you know, that view of, you know, the south and, you know, London, where the streets are paved with bastards. That was, it was all good humour, but I wasn't, coming from London, it was like, because they are so arrogant up their own arses, they aren't even aware so much that there is this, that divide that went on. So that was a whole thing that you... It was a different approach, that northern thing, and I liked it. My parents are Welsh as well, so that thing of just being open and speaking to strangers and stuff like that wasn't shocking. You know, that there is that, especially in London, and maybe less now, but that, you know, that thing of you'd have a newspaper in your face, people just wouldn't engage with other people, so different temperaments. So that was interesting. No, he was great. I got to play with Zach as well, who Jay played with later as well, who's a, you know, fantastic drummer and got great sense of humour and a fantastic character, isn't he? No, for me, that really saved me, actually. The band has sort of imploded, really, hadn't it, at the end of the 90s, you know, with everything. So I was really lucky. I got taken under Johnny's wing, and he introduced me to loads of music, and music that you wouldn't expect Johnny Marr to be into, you know, especially, and he was into all that psychedelic stuff. Even for a start, he's got a tattoo of Aldous Huxley, isn't he? He's into that whole world of Huxley and that idea of expanding one's mind and all of that. But yeah, he got me into Pentangle, Bert Jansch, and all of those folk guitarists as well. He was playing with Bert Jansch, actually. He was still alive at that time. He was doing some gigs with him. So, yeah, just this whole other world of music I got introduced to. It was great.
Alonza, is that a lute you've got behind you as well?
This thing is a bazooki.
A bazooki?
It's an Irish bazooki.
What kind of bullets does it take?
Huh?
What kind of bullets does it take?
A 9mm standard.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. I've had my eye on getting like a mandolin or something like that for ages, but I've been cut off by my missus from constantly buying endless amounts of needless extra musical instruments. I've just got far too many as it stands.
But you just say, look, I don't have a mandolin. You say, I've got a guitar. If you've got another guitar, you could say, yeah, fair enough. I've got too many guitars. I understand. I don't have any mandolins.
I've got about 13 guitars at the moment, so I need to sell.
Have you got an auto harp?
I have
an auto harp.
I need an auto harp.
You need one of these things.
I need a banjo as well, definitely.
Two stone to play. Just push on them buttons and strum. It's great.
Got one of these though. Tenor ukulele.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, got you. Yeah.
Have a little
they're great. Them. No, I love the short scale sounds. Exactly. That's because they're in a different register as well to your classic rock and roll sounds. They cut through. They own their own little space within that, you know, the rock and roll kind of, you know, sound. It will always cut through.
Do you know what I accidentally discovered on this the other day? See. You can play Zep on it.
Very good.
I was going to say,
designed
when
for
he
it.
Started this album, or the last album, when he nearly started as a ukulele album, the first Congregational Church album, that was going to start as a ukulele album.
Really?
And there's still some remnants. There are little ukuleles dotted through the album stuff. Hmm.
We talked about George Harrison a bit earlier, and like I know that he loved his ukes, didn't he? And he always had like, I think he would always have four or five in the boot of his car, and whenever he'd go anywhere, yeah, he'd just chuck a load of ukes around. And there's the anthology footage, they're all sat there playing ukes. They're just a lovely, fun little instrument, aren't they? You can just take them wherever and just make music.
I repeat, don't you think she's kind of sweet, neat? Now I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? Ain't she sweet?
Ukulele War.
It's true, and actually together they make a great sound, don't they? They make that really almost like Hawaiian kind of that chorusy sound. That's lovely.
That is lovely. Well,
James has just very nicely set me up for a question there. Which is, so I heard at least that it was a rumor that you guys had actually been endorsed and kind of given the George Harrison blessing on some level. Could you tell me a little bit about whether that's true and how you guys connected with George Harrison, if so?
I think was that with Chris Beard reached out to him when we were the track that we called Go Cooler, which was a riff, wasn't it?
On Wonderwall.
What was the track? It was a track of Wonderwall called
Skiing.
Skiing, yes.
From the Wonderwall music album.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, from the music album of the film. Yeah.
So we're obsessed with that.
So it was a riff. So we'd played through the riff a bit, hadn't we? And then Crispin had written a little bridge, chorusy, couple of choruses, for it. And then obviously we'd recorded and needed to put. So I think he reached out to ask if he could,
could use the riff.
George, we've used your riff in a song. If we could, I don't know who was it through. I don't forget. There was some links. There was some connection. Anyway, it turns out it wasn't George Harrison's link, was it? It was Eric played that. It was Eric Clapton's
Eric's riff.
But he said we could use it. But we never met him. I think never got to meet him, did we?
No. I sat behind him.
That was our one little link. He got a letter from George.
Yeah, Dodd's got a letter, yeah.
What was that, Dollar?
As I said, Dodd's got a letter, didn't he? Nice letter from him. He's still got it, I think.
So, Go Cooler, that was a B-side, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And Jay, did you say you were sitting behind him a couple of rows at one point?
I was. I went to a Ravi Shankar gig, believe it or not, back in the day, and he was like first or second row from the front. We were just kind of behind him a few rows, and I kept looking at the back of his head, going, "That looks like George Harrison." I could almost touch him, but I didn't because that's illegal. But So we never got to meet him. It was always kind of. It wasn't meant to be. But Crispin almost met him via a letter.
Well, fair enough.
The rumor I'd heard was way more elaborate than that, that he was the one who discovered you and signed you and all sorts of this stuff. But if that's
I prefer that story. Can we use that one from now on? That's much better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Continue my work. No. We'll have that story. That sounds much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheers for that. Thanks.
He endorsed us to continue his work and spreading the word.
One other thing I was just going to ask about on the Oasis side, actually, Jay, is that you would always, Noel would introduce the band and he would go through and pick everyone out. And you always ended up getting a load of different sort of quite fun nicknames, like the Shroud and Gandalf, things like that. Were you okay with that?
No, I hated it. No, I'm joking. It was fine. It was fine. It was very funny. I mean, you know, the audience are going to do it if he doesn't. So, you know, I've got long hair and a beard. They're going to shout something.
No, it was great, and you brought so much to it, and it was just like you said, there's a different look as well because you've got it's fantastic.
I was just being me. If that bothered anyone, I'm sorry.
Fuck me if it's not the Son of God, Jesus Christ, playing keyboards. The thing is, you can't see him, but he's got his beard on back to front. He's milking it a little too much now these days. This next song's called The Man.
This gentleman here is a direct descendant of Gandalf. His name is The Shroud. This is called The Master Plan.
They really transformed into another band, didn't they, at that point? I mean, with Andy and Gem joining. I toured with, when I was playing with Johnny, we did a tour in Europe with Oasis. And it was, Andy and Gem were just on board then.
They were going through a funny time as well, weren't they? It was that sort of difficult album time.
That's it. Noel wasn't on that tour. Noel had left that tour. And so when was that then? Early noughties, I guess,
Yeah, that's 2000 when Matt Dayton from Mother Earth joined the band.
That was a funny time because
it was well on keyboards as well. It was a guy called Zeb Jameson played keyboards as well.
Bite people. He's a bit of a biter.
He was a biter.
I've never met him.
Oh dear.
I don't know, there's just stories.
He didn't bite me.
I've bitten myself.
It was a nice tour. Everyone was lovely on that tour. It was really fun.
But it was a bit, I mean, that tour's pretty mad. Like, you hear the, I think it was pretty fractious. Like, they got some pretty bad crowd responses and things, those European festivals, though.
Yeah.
So,
Well, we didn't play the festivals. I think it was just a little, you know, like sports halls.
All right, fair play. I just wanted to go back to the new album again. Which I'm sure Tom will be happy about. You've got the song on there that's like a classic Bollywood song called Chura Liya. And I heard it and I was listening to the album. I thought, oh, that's brilliant. I love that. And then this sort of female Indian voice comes in. My wife and daughter love Bollywood. Like, my wife's a little bit Indian and they've always loved Indian music and Bollywood. And I said, oh, yeah, check this song out. And they were like, yeah, that's Chura Liya. That's like one of the most famous Bollywood songs. I was like, oh, right.
It's a classic. Yeah.
Yeah, but was there a particular reason why you picked that one out? And who is the female vocalist on it, by the way? I don't know if it is still Asha Bosley, because she's like 90 now.
No, we got in, what was it? Le Bonny, she's called. She's a Bengal. No, she's not from Bengal. We got her through our percussionist, Himanesh, who's played tabla on the album. And he's the son of Hamankshu, who played back in the 90s on K. And Hamankshu now is an old, much older, he's got long hair and a beard. He looks a bit like Jay, actually, Indian version of Jay now, amongst. So he's passed on that role to Himanesh, who's a young guy, grew up in Stratford, little London Asian guy, really sweet guy, plays great tabla. And he found Le Bonny, who's from that musical, that Bangladeshi musical community in East London. She's got that authentic tone, you know, which is. Yeah, she's great. And Crispin had done a rough translation of the lyrics into English. So you've got that sort of just bringing it to an English speaking audience, I guess. Thing.
Yeah.
But it is. I think I'm trying to think. Crispin had demoed that years ago, actually. And it had been sitting around. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it just seemed really right for this album, I guess.
It's a gorgeous song. And like I said, having the Indian voice come in as well, it's just beautiful. Because you've always had those Indian connections, but then, you know, it's
especially that Bollywood from that period, that 60s, that real, you know, I mean, it's in its heyday at the moment, Bollywood, but at that time, it was really coming into its own, and they were taking a lot of, you know, those musical influences from the West as well. So you got all of those kind of 60s beat sounds and you know, even some psychedelic sounds within that production, which was really nice. It was a nice way that crossed over on that side of things as well. So it was quite a natural thing to do. It fell in the right era in that sense, the recording.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, how about Cooler Shaker Plays Bollywood? That's your next album. There you go.
To brush up. Should, on yeah. Album. We've never played there. We want to get out to India. We'd love to tour. Good excuse to get out there, basically. Mm. I haven't been for years.
Go on, James. Well,
as we are sort of moving towards the end of our time, I'm going to ask a pretty random question here. And you might not even have the answer. In an interview with the NME, fairly recently, actually, Crispin repeatedly rechristened Radiohead the Arsewipes. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen the interview, but it all seems in very good humour. This is an unlikely band rivalry, Cooler Shaker versus Radiohead. Jay, can you give us any sort of background on...
Well, we defo beat him in an arm wrestle, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I reckon they'd thrash us at Domino's, mind. No, there's not really any history. I think it's just a bit of that old
school. The NME, I think, in typical NME fashion, they'd ask the provocative question and they would
say something horrible.
Wasn't it the story that... Yeah, Radiohead didn't want their new album to get leaked, so they were thinking, "What can we title it so no one will, you know, think to look into it?" And they thought, I think one of the suggestions was Cooler Shaker Demos, which was a cheap, nasty swipe. You know, I don't know.
Well, it's bollocks as well. I'd listen to you guys over
maybe
Radiohead
in response
any day.
To that,
that's bollocks anyway. Radiohead is like, well, okay, I've learned my lesson from slagging artists.
Yeah, let's not go there.
We're all about love. We're not going to slag off other bands, are we, Jay? We're not going to be goaded into slagging off bands, overrated bands, that pretentious overrated.
We
bands.
Slag ourselves.
We're not going to get goaded into doing that, are we?
If everyone just wrote their own bad press, it would be a much better world, wouldn't it?
Well, for the record, I'd be far more likely to steal the Cooler Shaker Demos.
Very
bless you, sir. The check is in the post.
So what's the plan then? So you're more, I know obviously the gigging, it started out like the gigging, and then you've got this, you know, you've knocked these last two albums out really quickly. So is it you just sort of in this rich vein of thought, like, look, let's not wait 6 years again. Let's just keep cracking on. And it does feel like there's a bit of a movement now, like Shed 7 got to number one last week, you know, Liam and John are back, like we said, and, you know, it feels like, you know, there's a bit of a resurgence, actually. But that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it seems to be coming up to good times in music again. We've had a bit of a grey spot, haven't we, for a best part of a decade now. It's not really been much happening, I don't think, in music. But this is all looking promising.
We've all got, you know, it's all come together as well. It's true, we've always been lazy buggers, and you know, we'll make a record, tour a bit, and then spend 5 years farting around doing other stuff. So I think everyone at the moment, everyone's really in the band. We're all vibing, enjoying just hanging out and playing together. That's what's been really good. Yeah. Since Jay's come back, actually, it's been really nice.
You're saying that now.
It's been a band. I'm saying that because you're there. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you're very kind.
Yeah. Just for the cameras, Jay. You know.
Yeah. I know it's not real.
Yeah. No, it's been absolutely great. Everyone, you know, it's focused. So yeah, we're going to get out and do some, I think it's announced today, and we're doing a UK tour in April.
Yes, indeed.
Getting out again to Japan in a week or so, aren't we?
So. Yeah.
Writing, we're going to just have a little bit, even do some recording. We've got a studio out here in Belgium, so hopefully after the Japanese tour, we're even going to try and do a little bit of recording, maybe between Japan and the UK tour. Just working away.
We've been busy. It's
the end of the world soon. Well, they're all talking about World War III, so we want to get, you know, write a few tunes, get a few gigs in before.
Save up for our bunkers.
Yeah, exactly.
We heard Artie Burman, and we heard Asha, and that Indian record player, that old Indian record player. We heard Jalti Jalti, we go back Giza, and that Indian record player, that old Indian record player, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, lads, it's been such a privilege to talk to you. Genuinely, heartfeltly, you guys were like huge musical heroes of mine when I was a teenager. It's such a privilege. I am a little bit emotional. It's been fantastic to talk to you. And I would love to get the chance to do so again. Thanks so much for coming on the channel.
Lovely to meet you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All the best.
Yeah. And I thought you were decent. No. Well, no, I'll tell you what, when like, because that's the thing that kids these days don't understand. So when you're a teenager, right, you literally had, so when we're going through like the great Britpop albums of all time, I was like, well, I never bought that back in the day, because you only had your pocket money, right? And that was it. So I had a really difficult choice to make, and I went out and bought K, and I hammered it and hammered it and hammered it, because I only had like another four albums, because I was only 15. I couldn't afford anymore. You know what I mean? That's the difference, that like with streaming, yeah, you just, it's just, it's all there. It's all available. You can flick it on for a bit.
Suggestions, shuffling, or all of that shit. Yeah, it's true. No. Absolutely.
No, I was very pleased. No, I loved you guys. And it's just been great following the career ever since. It's just really exciting. Obviously, Jay coming back has been great. So all the best. Good luck with it.
Thank you, sir.
So there we go. How cool was that? Alonza and Jay from Cooler Shaker. And as I said, thanks again to James Hargreaves for coming on and bringing his unique perspective on things. I thought we worked well, actually. He sort of has these properly prepared questions and I just chat shit. So it sort of seems to work well. Cooler Shaker Natural Magic is out very shortly. I think it's first week of February, 2nd of February it comes out. Which I've had a listen to it already. They sent me a link, which is one of the fun things about having this this job. It's not a job, you know what I mean? One of the cool things about doing the podcast is that sometimes we get to hear music early. And and they're touring April and May in the UK, Cardiff, Bexhill, Wolverhampton, London, Electric Ballroom, that'd be cool. Newcastle, Glasgow, Leeds, Manchester, Bristol, Bournemouth. So yeah, all very exciting. Oh, and they're coming to Truck at Oxford on the 3rd of Feb. Ooh, I'll have to get down there. So that is all good. So thank you very much to the guys. Thank you for Tom, the PR guy, who set that up. And keep listening at the end of the credits, because there might be a little Easter egg about that. But yeah, very exciting to speak to the guys, and do make sure you're checking out the album and checking them out on tour if you can. All right, I think that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post additional episodes. The episodes go up early. We'll sometimes post the episodes with full tracks, so it's like becomes like a radio show, not just clips. So yeah, all good stuff over there. All right, that'll do it. Thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young. Stay young and invisible, 'cause he now just like me.
Lads, sorry, Tom has just joined the waiting room. So shall I just I'll bring him in?
Tom in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was coming, so I wasn't watching. I've just seen he's there. So.
Is he checking up on you? Pub.
Yeah, make sure we're not swearing.
Oh, we've not got any picture or audio, Tom, if you are there.
I am testing.
He's here. We can hear you.
We can hear you, sir.
Are you all right?
How are you doing, Tom?
Good. How are you doing?
Hello, all sir.
All good.
Hello.
He's been gentle with us so far.
Yes. Good to know. That's all we can ask for.
All right, let's move on and stop talking about Tom now, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, James.
Pretend I'm not here and carry on, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So why do you hate PR, and what is that the worst part about the music industry?
Well,